speaking of people who find and love interesting old things, The Story of My Teeth is a new novel about an auctioneer. He goes by the nickname Highway, and the things he auctions tend to be unusual. For instance, a collection of yellowed old teeth, thus the title of the book. To make the things he's selling more enticing, Highway cooks up interesting backstories for each of them. Tall tales and anecdotes and jokes. All those stories, along with the story of Highway's own life, come together in a charming and funny and thoroughly weird book. The author, Valeria Luiselli, was born in Mexico City, but has lived almost everywhere, from Costa Rica to South Korea to South Africa, and now the USA. Valeria, welcome to Studio 360.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
Good. So your dad was a Mexican diplomat.
For a while, yes.
Which accounts for the nomadic global childhood?
For part of it, yeah. I took off by myself when I was 16.
Because you were already used to living in other places you hadn't lived, so why not keep... I mean, did it sort of embolden you to do that?
I think it was more that I went back to live in Mexico when I was a teenager.
Right.
And I didn't quite know how to not be a foreigner. And I sought a way to leave again.
It was just too weird to be in a place you were supposed to be from but didn't feel it?
Yeah, it was just too weird. And I wanted to have a sense of belonging. And I did to a certain extent, but I was always somehow foreign. One of the areas in which that expressed was in language and the way that language in Mexico City was spoken. And I felt completely incapable of playing with language the way teenagers in Mexico played with it.
Huh. And they thought of your Spanish as what? How did it sound to them?
I think it probably sounded a little by the book or a little vintage. Like I probably spoke as a 60-year-old might have spoken, not a teenager.
It's interesting that it sounded like something vintage because this novel, in many ways, struck me as something from some other era. It doesn't seem like a contemporary novel. If somebody had shown it to me in a blind test and said, this is from 1920 or 1874, I would have said, oh, okay.
That's a great compliment. It's definitely the intention.
Before we talk more about Story of My Teeth, I would love you to read a bit from it.
All right. So Highway, the narrator, has at some point bought in an auction a set of teeth, which he claims are Marilyn Monroe's. And this denture has been implanted in his mouth, and he's kept his old teeth. And he auctions them off, saying that they belong to a series of famous writers. So this is one of the lots. He calls them hyperbolic lots. This is lot number 8. Some teeth are tormented, such as the case of this one, the property of Mrs. Virginia Woolf. When she was just 30 years old, a psychiatrist posited the theory that her emotional ills were due to an excess of bacteria around the roots of her teeth. He decided to extract the 3 most seriously affected ones. Nothing changed. During the course of her life, several more teeth were extracted, but it made no difference. None at all. Rien de rien. Mrs. Wolf died by her own hand with many false teeth in her oral cavity. Her acquaintances only ever saw her smile at her funeral. It's said that lying dead in her half-open coffin in the center of the living room, her lips were spread in a smile that lit up her sharp, intelligent features. Who will offer 8,000 pesos for this tortured tooth? Anyone?
That is Valeria Luiselli reading from her new novel, The Story of My Teeth. So is that true? I mean, was Virginia Woolf, did the shrink pull her teeth and that helped make her suicidal?
In fact, yes, it is true. Well, no, I don't know if that helped make her suicidal, but it is true that she had a psychiatrist or a doctor who told her that her ills were due to excessive bacteria in the teeth. And she did, in fact, have many of her teeth pulled out. So the stories that are told in the lots are all true.
Huh.
or are all hyper true, as Highway says.
How did you develop this character?
A mixture of things. I was thinking at the beginning very much of my own uncle, Pepe Lopez, who is a tradesman in a big market in Mexico City.
Huh.
Called the Central de Abastos. It's a huge, huge market where you get everything from car parts to stolen goods to real estate. And he always has fascinating stories about things that he's selling. Stories that obviously add value to the things that he's selling.
So he is this guy.
So he is this guy in many ways. He also happens to have a false denture that he, when we were younger, he used to pull out and make dance on the table to our horror and sometimes to our great joy.
Oh,
so there's a lot of him in Highway. But what also happened was that every week I was hearing the voices of the workers reading my work.
Right. Now, we need to back up and tell the other whole strange and maybe singular part of how you did this novel, these workers. So it's dedicated to the Jumex factory staff. So who are the Jumex factory staff and how did they get mixed up into your novel writing?
So Jumex is...
Oh, yes, of course, it would be Jumex.
Jumex. Well, in English, it would be Jumex because who comes... It's related to juice and Mex, Mexico. So
yeah.
It basically, Jumex is jugos mexicanos,
yeah.
Mexican juice.
Sí. Si.
claro. So Jumex is a factory that produces juice. And they're a kind of juice monopoly in Mexico. And they have a big contemporary art collection. A very important and well-known art
like
collection.
The Latin American art collection.
It really like yeah. The Latin, yeah, it is. So the factory and the gallery coexisted in this world, but they were also lived in kind of parallel realities that never completely touched.
Workers and rich arty snobs.
Yeah, basically,
yeah.
Basically, yes, that's it. And so the Jumex Gallery asked me to write some fiction piece for. An exhibition that they were putting together. But I went to write for the workers in the factory and not really so much for the gallery space.
So you come up with this idea to have the factory workers be your first readers and collaborate with them. And the Jumex management says, okay, you can do this strange thing. But how did that actually work?
So basically, I sent one installment each week.
And they weren't required to read your stories,
no.
Right? They were. It was a volunteer.
Imagine that would have been so horrible. No, they were. No one was required to do anything. People were kind of invited to participate and to read, and if they were interested, to come to a meeting about it. And 12 people, I think, showed up to the first meeting, and they formed a kind of reading group. And they basically they would come together once a week. I would have sent them my installment, and then they would criticize it, and then they would just start telling their own stories, which I then always used in the next installment.
And what was cool about this is that these meetings were recorded, and the recordings sent to you here in the U.S. and you actually have brought a clip, I am told, from one of those recordings of two people who work in different parts of Jumex meeting to talk about your book.
Aquí en la parte de los jugos, ¿dónde trabajas tú?
You work here or like in the juice area?
Ah, okay.
Yeah, I work here in the plant where they make the canned juices. It's a small area and there's many, many machines. It gets so hot in there, horrible. Oh, here in the gallery, it's so cold. Oh, yes, it's really fresh here, she says. No, it's really cold, he says. When it's winter, we have to have like 3 socks, especially with these kind of shoes that are so thin. The cold just comes in and hurts your bones. So it's interesting how just on the basis of something as simple as hot and cold, there's like those two very separate.
So they
worlds.
Weren't critiquing that week's story.
Not then and there. They were sometimes they were brutal critics, no, and really? Something that they didn't like and or they thought was incomprehensible.
So, so you're writing for factory workers. Did you think, oh, I have to make this simpler? I can't refer to Virginia Woolf and things like that?
No, I think that that's silly. Like I what I did think was I have to write something that pulls them in and entertains them and. After a day's work at the factory,
right,
and that's a big challenge to not lose their attention, to kind of keep them interested and motivated, so that they would still come to the sessions yeah. every week. So I had to think about like ways of, I mean, it was exactly, I guess, like writing a novel in installments in the late 19th century,
as Dickens, for instance, did. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. That was the idea.
It also sounded to me like. Because you responded to how they responded, it's like writing television shows. Writers of television shows, they hear that the audience likes this or hates this or wants this to happen and write accordingly in future serials. So you now have a television career.
Hopefully. That would solve a lot of problems.
I mean, writing prose fiction is by its nature a solitary, sometimes lonely occupation. Did doing this change the process, make it feel different than anything you'd ever done?
It did. I had never had so much fun
really?
Writing something,
yeah.
never in my life. And I didn't know that it was going to be like that. When the first recording came to me and I heard them read out loud, and then I heard them discuss and critique and have fun and laugh and tell their stories, I was mesmerized. And I thought, oh my God, I just discovered. So I felt like I had just, I don't know, opened a door into like a paradise.
Yes.
And I thought, well, it's going to be really boring to go back to writing the way I've always written.
But you could adapt this. You could like write online and let the world
know. The online thing, I don't know. I mean, maybe it's just pure like prejudice and snobbery. And
because in every sense, you seem to be a person from another era. and speaking of other eras, in the afterword, you talk about this tradition that I didn't know about and sounds charming and fascinating of cigar readers in Cuba.
Yeah.
Describe that.
Yeah, that's the idea to write in installments for workers came from that. It's like something that's been there in the Latin American tradition, primarily in Cuba, transplanted to Mexico for a while.
Where people, just to entertain the workers while they're rolling cigars or whatever, read fiction to them.
Cigar readers are basically people who read while others are doing a very repetitive task. And it was really important in Cuba because it was the way in which, for example, you know, thousands of people heard Tolstoy and Dostoevsky. Now the tobacco readers in Cuba still exist. But I read an article that said that the sort of big classics have been replaced by things like 50 Shades of Grey.
Really? So that's the revolution is over, man.
The revolution is over.
Valeria Luiselli, it was a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your time.
The Story of My Teeth is out now. Es una pena que no, antes ya te conocí, una pena que no, pues tanto yo te busqué, una pena que no, pero hay que recuperar ese tiempo al 100%. Es una pena que no, pero ya vas de pensar, todo este mundo tenemos.